Our profession is defending the motherland. Join your side. A real job. These are just some of the slogans the Russian Defense Ministry had plastered on army recruitment ads in Moscow back in 2023. These taglines appeared on billboards, bus stops, and posters in shop windows. In a slick recruitment video, the Defense Ministry used another slogan. You're a man. Be one. But in 2024, the recruitment ads in Moscow underwent a rebrand. Instead of appealing to patriotism and masculinity, they promised cold, hard cash. To be exact, cash payments starting at 5,200,000 rubles. It's no secret that Russia relies on high salaries and sign-on bonuses to recruit more soldiers to fight in Ukraine. Despite the army's heavy casualty rate, an estimated 30,000 men still join up every month. But after 4 years of full-scale war, the cost of finding recruits is only getting higher, and Russia's regions are paying the price. Welcome to the Naked Pravda. Hello, you're listening to the Naked Pravda podcast from Medusa in English. I'm Deputy Editor Eilish Hart, and for today's show, I sat down with Janis Kluge, a researcher at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs in Berlin, who has been tracking Russia's military recruitment efforts. According to official figures, around 422,000 people signed contracts with the Russian military in 2025, just a 6% drop from the year before. For this episode, I wanted to make sense of that figure. After 4 years of full-scale war, why are hundreds of thousands of men still joining the Russian military voluntarily? How much does it cost to sustain recruitment, and who is paying for it? And given Russia's staggering battlefield losses, is it only a matter of time before Vladimir Putin has to declare another mobilization? We get into all of these questions and more in the interview, but first we had to crunch some numbers and explain where the data on Russia's recruitment drive comes from. Suggestion that we talk about sources is a great place to start. So my first question is, how long have you been tracking Russian military recruitment trends, and what sources do you use to gather this data?
Well, I really started trying to track recruitment in summer of 2024. I was not the first person to do that, obviously. I mean, there are many similar projects by different outlets that also use similar methods like I do. For example, there's iStories. They've been using Russian budget data before me. I was inspired by their work and started doing a bit of that myself, first with the federal budget and then with regional budgets, to understand if there's any data out there that we can use to verify the official statements that we have about recruitment. Because I think it's clear that recruitment is maybe the most important, maybe it's the Achilles heel of Russia's war, at least the way that Russia fights it right now. It is based on recruiting lots of men and doing that mostly voluntary. So yeah, this voluntary model, how long it can last, that was really a question that started to interest me a lot in 2024. There are different sources you can use. We have statements from the defense minister, usually Shoigu, of course, now Belousov. They reported, I think, once a year early in the year how the last year went, or in December. And then we have regular statements by Medvedev. So they are reporting a really stable rate of recruitment. They say that it's usually around 400,000 and 500,000 that, you know, men that were recruited in a certain year. And this is essentially the only real official information that we have on this. So the question is how we can verify if what these officials are saying is actually true, or at least understand if it's to some degree reliable or pure fantasy, is that we look at Russian budget data. And we can use both the federal and the regional budgets, because Russia pays out sign-on bonuses both from the federal budget and from regional budgets. From the federal budget, it used to be 195,000 rubles. It was increased to 400,000 rubles in August of 2024. So when we know how much Russia is spending in total on these bonuses, we can divide it by the size of the bonus, so we get an impression of how many contracts there are. Of course, you know, there are always doubts with regards to any data that Russia publishes, but I believe that, you know, that we can still rely on these budget figures. It's highly granular data. It's still published according to the same system, very similarly like it was before. So I actually trust this data. I think that there's no reason to believe that the Russian finance ministry tries to manipulate this. So I think we can rely on it. And this data gives us an impression of how many payouts there were for these bonuses. So that's actually quite convenient, because we have one figure for all of Russia. And this figure over the last years has more or less confirmed at least the size or the relative dimension that Russian officials are talking about. It was usually a bit less, but not everybody is entitled to a bonus. So if you're a prisoner, you might not get it. So it's reasonable to assume that not everybody got one. So, you know, it's at least when the officials are saying it's 400,000, maybe then we find bonus payments for 300 or 350,000 men. So it's plausible. Additionally, regions are also paying bonuses to recruit. And so you can look into regional budgets. Not all of them are publishing it. Not all of them are really clear about where exactly they are publishing it. So this is a bit more difficult, and we don't have data for all of Russia. But we can try to extrapolate from the regions that we do have and sort of get another number and also compare it to the official statements. And in the last years, that was also relatively close. And this gives you an overall picture where the official statements are probably not too far away from actual recruitment success.
According to the official figures, Russia signed 450,000 new recruits in 2024, 422,000 in 2025. So there was a slight drop in recruitment last year. Could you talk a bit about how recruitment dynamics have changed over time? Like, is this year-on-year decline a consistent trend?
I think it's important to sort of understand the system, how it works in Russia, and it is very much a top-down system. So there's a target that is set at the beginning of the year of how many men there are to be recruited, and then this number gets broken down for each region. So each region gets a certain quota that it has to fulfill. And if it doesn't, then there will be consequences for the governor and so on. And the regions, you know, often they also break down these quotas for municipalities. So it's very much top down. And it's not, by the way, it's not publicly confirmed that this system exists, but there are many signs and many reports, you know, where we have certain sources speaking about it, or let's say governors saying we need to recruit another 1,000 this month, you know, so you can see there's a lot of signs that there is this top-down system.
Right.
And in a system like that, if recruitment gets more difficult, you wouldn't see the numbers go down, but we would see certain stress in the regions that are not fulfilling it. And you would see them using more radical methods to try to fulfill it. But because there is so much pressure on the regions to fulfill it, so far they have managed to do that, although at, you know, increasing cost. And it's getting more difficult. So we can say that basically the number in the end looks really stable. And last year it was supposedly around 420,000, the year before 450,000. So that, you know, seems relatively stable. But what has changed is how much the regions have to pay, and maybe the degree of, force they have to use. There are many different methods how you can find these men and where you can find them. And so I think that it is definitely becoming more difficult. You can tell that from the data.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, Russia hasn't had a mobilization wave since the fall of 2022. And even as the war enters its fifth year, the military is still managing to recruit tens of thousands of people, you know, monthly. So what are the main factors driving recruitment? Why are so many people still enlisting?
Well, I think that the motives are different. They evolved over time. And by now, I think the dominant, overwhelming motive is receiving this sign-on bonus. There are often people who are in, let's say, precarious situations, or where, you know, they end up in prison or with the police, or they have very high debt, and so they face difficulties. And sometimes going to the front is the way out from these kind of situations. So you can hardly call that really voluntary recruitment. It's more like that the state is exploiting these emergency situations that some men find themselves in. And it sometimes, of course, also creates these emergency situations with the goal of finding men to recruit. For example, if we are talking about policemen who get a payout if they find somebody who they can then send to the front line. So that also exists. There are also in a dozen or so regions, there's also a payment for people who find someone who then signs a contract. And of course, you can imagine that this leads to all kind of pressure, betrayal, I mean, you know, misinformation and so on. And also this affects mainly the men at the fringes of society. So people who are vulnerable, who don't have a network, don't have anyone to protect them. So I think that they are more easily forced into the system. But still, from what I can see, the majority of the people who sign on, the men who are signing on, is they're just seeing this enormous amount of money, and it's so much wealth, it changes the lives of their families in a very dramatic way. And I think simply that that is convincing. And of course, there's still, I believe, no, there's still the idea that it's something good to do, that you should do that, that you should serve your country, and this is some kind of war where Russia needs to be defended. I think this is also very much present. It's probably not the driving motive anymore, but you can use it to justify or to, I don't know, to make your decision look heroic while it's maybe just about the money.
Russia's military spending has surged during the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And in December, Defense Minister Andrei Belousov reported that spending directly related to the war amounted to 5.1% of GDP in 2025, which is the equivalent of more than $137 billion. How does spending on recruitment fit into this picture?
Yeah, it's a substantial part of it, but it's not most of it. So you can look at what regions are paying and what the federal budget is paying. And there are also sometimes bonuses from municipalities and companies. And if you add all of that together, you end up with around 0.5% of GDP. So roughly a tenth of what of the number that Belousov was referring to. Maybe it's also important to put this number, the 5.1% of GDP, into context. This is just spending of the defense ministry from the federal budget. So this does not include regional payments. They are often not included in these calculations. And right now, there are many costs of this war which are not included in these 5.1%. So actually, it's probably a bit bigger, but you can still see that payouts for these one-time payments for recruitment are not the most expensive thing. I even believe that the payouts to the families of killed and injured soldiers might make up more than that, because if a family member dies in the war, then you're entitled to 10 to 15 million rubles. So it's even more than the sign-on bonus from different sources from the government budget. And yeah, so while it is substantial, it's not the most expensive part of this war for Russia.
If I'm understanding you correctly, it sounds like Russia could sustain this spending at the federal level or perhaps even increase it. Is it possible that this is becoming unsustainable for regional economies and that the federal government would have to step in and actually take more of the burden off the regions?
Yes, and I believe we actually close to a situation where the situation, I mean, where the balance of regional budgets is so much under pressure that the government, the federal government, has to transfer more funds to them. Because last year, a region said, you know, if you take all regional budgets together, there was a deficit of 1.5 trillion rubles, which is, I believe, a historic high. And this is about the amount of money that I believe that the regions are contributing to the war. So it's basically cost of the war that the regions are paying. And there were already some signs that the government, you know, is trying to at least support some of the regions. There's a debt relief program where a certain expenditure qualifies. So if a region spends something on the war, at least if it's a poor region, then it can apply for debt relief. And so this is a first sign that the government is, you know, also sees this problem. But so far, at least from the data that is available, we don't see any increase in transfers to regional budgets to cover that. And I mean, there is reporting from some regions that you know, that they struggle to fulfill their quota and they cannot because they cannot increase the bonus because they don't have enough money for that. And we also saw at the end of 2025 that a number of regions suddenly really decreased their bonuses to the minimum for a couple of months. And then in January, now they raised it again. So it's pretty obvious that they were struggling to fulfill their budget, so they had to decrease it for a period of time, and now they can hike it again, and that the new budget year has started. So you see that it's causing stress for the budgets of the regions, definitely. There are some extreme cases like Marielle, where the sign-on bonuses are 10% of the regional budget. So, you know, comparable to spending on health or education. So it is, you know, in some cases it's extreme. I would say on average, it's about like 3% or 4% of regional budgets that goes to the recruitment. But still, regions don't have a lot of wiggle room in their budgets. They have to pay lots of salaries of government, of public officials, workers in you know, healthcare, schools, and so on. So they don't have a lot of funds easily available to do that. I mean, at least most regions don't. There are some rich regions for which, of course, it's easier, but yeah. The stress is there, and also the bonuses are increasing every year, and they are also basically the average bonus is increasing every month. And so you can see that, yeah, at least the way that it's set up right now, it's not really sustainable from my point of view. And sometime during this year, the federal government has to give the regions money unless it wants to risk that, you know, the regional budgets really, you know, kind of fall apart under the burden of the war.
I've also noticed reports of this leading to another trend where men who want to enlist are actually going to regions that are offering higher signing bonuses instead of signing up in their home region. So I guess that creates an additional recruitment dynamic or trend there.
Yes, this is, of course, a problem. The rules for who gets this regional bonus, it's different from region to region. So some regions are saying, okay, you only get it if you're registered there, if you've been living there for a certain time. But there are regions who don't do that, and you can go there and enlist from there and get a higher bonus. And so there is a competition. And this leads to a situation where maybe if a neighboring region is offering a higher bonus, you have to match that. Otherwise, you will struggle to recruit enough men. And in this competition, you can see that the average bonus is going up and up and up because there's a certain pool of men who are to some degree mobile and would go to the region that is just, so to say, the highest bidder where they can get the biggest bonus.
The Bell recently published a report about how Russia's poorest regions are suffering the most military losses, and they predicted that this trend will only get worse because the economy is slowing with the war dragging on, and their reasoning was that, you know, high military salaries and bonuses are already more attractive to those in poorer regions, and then economic decline will only create a bigger pool of potential recruits. At the same time, the Ukrainian military claims that as of December, Russia's battlefield losses had started to outstrip recruitment numbers. Could high military casualties eventually make it more difficult for Russia to sustain recruitment?
That's a really good question, and because it's essentially about the decision-making process of these men. What leads them to say, yes, I'm willing to sign, I'm going to sign right now? Is it that they are becoming unemployed? Is it sort of financial stress? Is it simply the wish to get millions of rubles to change the lives of their families? Of course, somewhere in this calculation, there must also be a thought about the risk of doing it. So the probability of being killed or at least injured in this war, my assumption is that this risk is not usually appropriately considered, at least otherwise it's very difficult to explain that so many men are signing up. Maybe there is an illusion that it's not as deadly, not as risky as it is. But in some ways it plays a role. So the question is, for these men, before they make the decision, do they look at the reality of the war? What do they hear? Do they see like neighbors, dads or sons or husbands, coming back in coffins? And does it influence their decision? Of course, we can imagine a situation where people realize, or that there's overall like an impression that it's becoming much too dangerous to sign up. There's also an example of the opposite. For example, in the beginning of 2025, when Donald Trump came to power, and it seemed like, you know, there would be a possibility that there's some kind of deal, the war will be over soon. This seemed to have led to an increase in recruitment of people, of men who were thinking, okay, I will try to get the 3 or 4 million now, and then I don't have to go to fight, or just briefly, and it's not as risky. So in some way, how the war is going affects the ability to recruit, definitely. At the same time, it's difficult to understand how much information these men really have, how much difference it makes, because the war is already so deadly. For example, you know, you can look at the data on killed Russian soldiers from Mediazona, the 200 project. You know, it's not a total number. So you realize that from, like, if Russia recruits 400,000 one year, that probably around 20% of them, you know, will die very, you know, over the course of the next year. So it is very risky. And yes, I think this is probably also the biggest danger for this model of voluntary recruitment, that the impression that it's simply not worth it going, because you just will die and the war will never end. And this can come quite suddenly and unexpectedly, that this assessment that it's too dangerous, that this sort of spreads among Russian male population.
At the top of the interview, you called manpower the Achilles heel of Russia's war. And we've just spent a lot of time talking about recruitment as opposed to conscription. Like I said before, Russia hasn't had a mobilization wave since 2022. Do you see any possibility that the Kremlin will need to have another round of mobilization in the near future?
I don't think it will happen in the next months, but it is definitely a possibility. And I mean, we also know that there have been some kinds of preparations, some attempts to improve the system that in some ways also not worked very well in 2022 by, you know, having these digital registries of men who, and also being able to close the border for men who are, you know, who've received the note that they have to go to fight. So the system is in place. We have already seen that the political willingness is there, that Putin is willing to go there if necessary. So yes, I think if it is required, they will do it again. I think that it would be, that the consequences might be even more drastic than last time, because I think that they would have to close the border for men if they do it. Because if it happens for the first time, you can sort of tell yourself, okay, this is a one-off exceptional situation. It will not happen again. We saw that many men left Russia, but after maybe a year or so, they came back. And if it happens again, now then it's something that you can expect to also happen more and more in the future. And then maybe you'd rather leave the country. So I think, you know, if they go take this step one more time, it will be seen as a sort of a indication of that also the war is not going great. I think it would really hurt recruitment. You know, if they force people in there, this will make it less likely and they will find people who go voluntarily. But yeah, at the same time, I think they would, because simply the priority that this war has. Again, I'm watching sort of the bonus payments of regions late last year, early this year. And so far, I do not see, you know, a dramatic decrease that would sort of trigger such a step. But then again, I don't know how the situation actually is on the Russian side, on the front lines. You know, if there's already a scarcity, there more and more experts are talking about it. And yeah, so I think it's not going as easy anymore. And we see this also in the increasing bonuses. But I cannot point a finger sort of to the time when it will happen. But I think it is a scenario that is not unlikely.
Thanks for listening, folks. That's this week's show. As always, check out Meduza's homepage for our reporting on Russia, Ukraine, and the surrounding region. Share this podcast with your friends and enemies, if you want. Write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're tuning in. Until next time.